This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, someone I work with every day. It's my pleasure to do so. And Carolyn, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Roger. It's always good to be back on the show.
So today, Carolyn, we're going to talk about a potpourri of different procurement issues, what's going on in the market, that sort of thing. But it's been a while since we talked, and I know we're talking about the third or fourth week in March, but I just wanted to give you a chance to provide any thoughts or reflections on 2013, the year that was or wasn't, or had a budget or didn't, kind of thing. So,
yes, well, I think it was a very busy year in the coalition, and we have about three or four priorities that we focused on all year. One was contract duplication. Always at the top of our members' list of issues to address because of the additional cost of doing business with the government. As you know, also multiple award schedule pricing policy, it's something of great interest to all of our members. So we did quite a bit of work on that, including a white paper that our members worked on and submitted to GSA that was very comprehensive in laying out the issues, the benefits, and the concerns that industry has with the MAS pricing policy and laying out some specific recommendations to GSA.
Well, why don't we pull back the layers of that onion a little bit and talk about, because you were one of the prime drivers of that memo. And as folks know, you and I work together at the coalition. So, so this will be a fun conversation or one we're both very familiar with. And we could provide the listening audience a little bit of background on the schedules program and what the white paper talks about. So I'm just going to turn it over to you. You can start, and I'll chime in.
Okay, well, as you know, Roger, our members are big supporters and participants in the multiple award schedule program as one of the largest, probably the largest, commercial item buying program in the federal government. GSA does about $40 billion worth of business through the program, and the Department of Veteran Affairs does another $10 billion in items unique to them that they've been delegated procurement authority from GSA to use. So it's a big program, lots and lots of participants, thousands of contractors, and it's operated well for many years, 20 or 30 years, I guess, under the most recent version of the pricing policy, but therein lies the problem. The pricing policy does date back 20 or 30 years, and a lot's changed, including the industry and the regulations that are applicable to agencies when they buy. So even though there have been changes in industry and with respect to the federal regulations, there has not been a written change to the MAS pricing policy. So there are some major provisions in the policy that we at the coalition believe need to be changed to reflect the changes that have occurred in industry and in the regulations, and most notably the price reduction clause.
Right. Well, the big changes to me when you talk about the commercial marketplace, the internet didn't exist. The standard catalog price list and that sort of thing, pricing today is much more dynamic. You'll get, different specials or deals day in and day out. Pricing sort of fluctuates, which to me is, that's one of the things we're talking about, right? That marketplace has changed in terms of the transparency to pricing and the dynamic nature of commercial pricing.
It's pricing has changed dramatically. At the time when the policy was first implemented, pricing was very standard. Now pricing is highly customized. So the issue is, how does the government take advantage of that highly customized pricing while it both assures itself and its customers that the pricing is good, and on the other hand, allowing industry to operate as it does in the commercial market?
Right. So, and so you have that side of it. And what's changed on the, you know, the task order, the government side, in terms of the requirements for competition at the task order level?
On the government side, there is a lot more competition at the task order level than there's ever been. There are instructions that tell agencies, particularly on the service side, to go out and get additional price competition almost on every large order. So instead of having to concentrate on the upfront price contract negotiation and on clauses like the price reduction clause that basically artificially try to drive the market down, you can rely on competition rather than some of the government unique clauses that are currently in the multiple award schedule program.
And another area I know we've talked a lot about is like what's the competitive impact on commercial firms with regard to the price reduction clause. It creates an additional sort of hurdle for them to be able to actually, frankly, compete in the commercial marketplace.
Yeah.
At least, is that something that
Well, for all the people who are really knowledgeable,
that's you and me, Carolyn.
Knowledgeable
everybody
about the program.
Everybody, stop listening.
You know that the price reduction clause requires contractors to maintain very extensive monitoring programs internally, so that a company will be able to track the prices that it awards to, not just to the government, but to its best commercial customers. As a matter of fact, the clause requires that the government and industry agree on a category of customer that will be the government's basis of award. And so that if there are any changes to that category of pricing to that customer, the government's price has to change. And so many contractors find that it is not only affects their government customer, but it really controls the pricing that they're going to give in their commercial market. And for companies that have a very large commercial business, this is a huge risk as they go into the market.
Right, and even a real life example that we see and we hear companies talk about all the time is the treatment of subcontracts under federal prime contracts as commercial transactions, mm-hmm. and how that actually limits competition or hinders competition for that subcontract. When the prime wants to compete that subcontract, they don't get as good a deal because the price reduction clause may inhibit their ability to give it a better deal because it's going to impact their schedule pricing. Right. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and it's kind of counterintuitive, because if a commercial company is selling to another company whose ultimate customer is the government, they kind of consider that they're selling to the government.
Right.
Whereas that is not the approach that particularly the auditors, the government auditors, take. And so many times, because of the confusion and what the definitions are, companies inadvertently get themselves into problems in audits.
Or they don't give as good a deal to the prime.
They don't give as good a deal to the prime, and that ultimately impacts the federal customer.
Right, and the taxpayer.
And the taxpayer.
Right, so paying a higher price than otherwise is necessary.
Yeah, and although it sounds kind of geeky to use your your phrase.
That's my favorite term.
Okay. It actually results in some real-world consequences, so much so that one of the major customers of the schedule actually asked for a waiver from the provisions from GSA and was granted that waiver.
Right. The Air Force, mm-hmm. was requested GSA waive the price reduction clause and its applicability to subcontracts for furniture that under its own contracts And GSA actually granted a waiver, which I think, you know, I guess actions speak louder than words. So I think GSA actually agrees that it does, you know, restrict competition for federal subcontracts. Yeah. Why they wouldn't fix the rule completely for everybody, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure they wouldn't articulate it that way, but that's the result. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why we wrote the white paper, is because there have been a lot of one-off fixes in the multiple award schedule program that apply to particular transactions or particular contracts. And we'd like to see the government take a comprehensive look at the program and to make these fixes program-wide.
Right. Well, Carolyn, we do have to take a break right now. But when I come back, I want to ask you one more question about the pricing policy. We could talk maybe a little contract duplication, maybe a little innovation. That's a big buzzword these days. My guest today is Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal. But federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Alston. She is the Executive Vice President of the Coalition for Government Procurement and works with me on a daily basis over at the Coalition. Carolyn, when we took the break, we were talking about, you know, one of our favorite geeky topics, the you know, pricing policy for the GSA schedules, and, you know, and the need to modernize it, bring it into sort of alignment or balance with the current competitive ordering procedure requirements, statutorily based competitive ordering procedure requirements, and the current state of the commercial market. But it's interesting development the last couple of weeks is that DPAP issued a deviation to the FAR for orders under the GSA Schedules Program. It's a deviation for DOD with regard to FAR 8.4, which now the deviation states that notwithstanding the fair and reasonable price determination on the scheduled contracts, it doesn't alleviate the obligation to do your own fair and reasonable price determination at the order level, and essentially incorporates or references FAR 15.4. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that, just generally, but also, like, you know, what are the ramifications for the pricing policy? Doesn't further undercut the need for, you know, this price reduction clause and things like that?
Yeah, well, I have several feelings about the deviation. And the first is, you wonder what's going to change, because in some ways it tells customer agencies to do what they should have been doing in the first place, which is taking advantage of price reductions when you have specific known requirements to attempt to lower the price. So that's the way the program is supposed to work. It's two levels of pricing. One is the contract level, but at the contract level, there are so many things that are unknown that there's an anticipation that at the task order level, agencies will go out and get a price that fits their particular requirements. So, I mean, so that's one thing. But on the other hand, having a deviation and citing 15.4 in particular, you don't know what types of additional requirements and justifications and need to document files that will translate into. And the schedules program is supposed to be a streamlined process. So slowly over time, many of the streamlining aspects of the schedule program are being brought back into the process. So and also it will make, I think, the more you require a customer to do, the less likely they are to use that vehicle, and that gets us back into the whole issue of contract duplication. So I hope that there is some way of achieving two things with the deviation. One is to encourage agencies to do what they should do, but not somehow build all of these additional documentation requirements back into the program that make it less effective for customers and more of a burden for the contractors as agencies decide, well, maybe I just don't want to do that. Maybe I want to go out and make a whole new contract vehicle.
Which will increase costs for everybody, that creating a whole new contract vehicle. Well, you know, I understand the thrust behind the idea of the deviation in the sense that all contracting officers ought to be looking at the deal to make sure it's a good deal, even at the task order level, right? And maybe more documentation or more analysis might be appropriate the larger the order. You could see that. But there is an issue. Is this the right model for addressing that issue? Or is there, you know, something less than incorporating FAR 15.4 that would, you know, meet the goals of trying to make sure people do look at, you know, what the price they're getting for the requirements that they are seeking to be met under the schedules program, or quite frankly, for any IDIQ contract? I mean, it's kind of ironic. I was looking at 16.5, and it essentially has the same sort of language with regard to fair and reasonable. It's said a different way, but it says essentially the same thing in 16.5. It says that, you know, for pricing, that if the price of a supplier service is established at the contract, then FAR 15.4 doesn't apply. Well, that's sort of saying the same thing. The prices are fair and reasonable at the contract level, so you don't apply 15.4, right?
Yeah, you would think and hope that there is a simpler way of getting all these things across. Because just looked at how many numbers we've tossed out in about last minute. 8.4, 15.4, 16 point something or another.
Five.
Okay. And a contracting person with more and more stuff piled on their desk has to be able to weed through that system of regulations.
Right. And you know, fundamentally, I think one of the things that sort of strike me about it is your point about contract duplication. And that is one of the things we hear from our members all the time, that the costs associated with it, the imperative to feel like if I don't bid on this major IDIQ, I'm going to be locked out of a particular market, you know, all those sort of things. Do you have any further observations that you've seen with regard to contract duplication?
Well, I think our members are supporters of the government-wide acquisition contract, the GWACs, and they're supporters of schedules because they are contract vehicles that all agencies can use, and the terms and conditions and requirements are known up front. They can build infrastructure monitoring systems to be geared to those particular vehicles, and agencies have a broad range of choices for goods and services against those contracts. So I think our members support the government-wide vehicles. I think there's some desire for some rationalization across those vehicles so that it'll be clear when to use particular ones and which services and products are on particular vehicles.
Right. It really is, to your point, to the extent you have a framework, it would allow the agencies to focus on their specific performance requirements and be able to quickly, effectively compete those amongst the contract holders. And I think, you know, the fact that you leverage pre-existing ones and have those being considered first, it saves time and money than creating a whole another IDIQ with the same contractors on it, providing the same services on contracts that are available government-wide that already exist.
Yeah, and I think another theme that runs through our initiatives from last year and that continues into this year is that even for the government-wide vehicles, there is a real need to examine them and identify provisions that are unique to government that add cost and don't add a commensurate value. And so we've been, that's a theme that runs through a number of our comments on government-wide policies, that runs through recommendations of the coalition to, as you always say, Roger, bring commercial back to commercial item contracting.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. Okay. Well, speaking of commercial, you know, there's the big buzzword these days is innovation. So I want you to put your arms around that, and how would you define it, or where do you think the government has an opportunity to provide greater access or reduce barriers. I think that's sort of what you're talking about with reducing government unique requirements, eliminating barriers to allow innovative commercial firms to participate in the federal market.
Right. In my mind, innovation equates a lot to flexibility. You want to give the contractor community to industry providers, you want to give them the flexibility to bring into the federal market the best that they have in their commercial market. And many times you cannot define that. You just have to step out of the way of it, of any obstacles to bringing those types of goods and services into the federal market. And recently, the coalition did do an innovations paper that was mostly focused on the IT schedule and potential changes to that schedule that would make it an innovation portal.
Right. Well, the idea, a process by which to eliminate or to provide greater flexibility by eliminating government unique requirements that, you know, basically restrict, frankly, maneuverability, right, of the companies and the customers to be able to transact business across the program. Carolyn, we have to take our next break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we'll talk a little bit more about innovation and how standardized labor categories fit into that dynamic. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel at the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Carolyn, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about innovation. That's one of the big buzzwords these days. It's interesting. There's a lot of talk around, this new 18F at GSA and Presidential Innovation Fellows. And, you know, and to your point about flexibility, it was interesting. I was reading about RFP Easy, which is one of the pilots they did to try to make it easier to actually contract with the federal government. And to me, that sort of symbolizes, and it's a portal through which folks could transactions, as I understand it, with my limited technical capabilities. But it seems to me that's sort of symbolic of what the issue really is. It's you can fix the systems and to be able to communicate quicker, easier, whatever. But it's the underlying government unique requirements, whether it's clauses, terms and conditions, and that sort of thing, that make it difficult to do business with the federal government. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I think that it's kind of indicative of how difficult it can be to do business with the federal government sometimes. By looking at the way that commercial companies structure themselves, they'll have whole divisions, whole companies sometimes that are set up just because they have to know the federal market. And there are some things about government that are truly unique that a company should have to accommodate, because the government does very complicated things. It has lots of authority, therefore lots of responsibility, and we have to respond to that as taxpayers. But on the other hand, there are some things that are unique and you don't see the value, and you don't see that there are sometimes commercial alternatives to that. So we have not, at the coalition, we have not advocated getting rid of every government unique requirement, just those requirements that add cost and don't add value.
Right. And, along those lines, one of the interesting things that when we talk about flexibility and what adds value or doesn't, is that there's an initiative right now looking at, standardized labor categories for commercial professional services on GSA schedules. And, to me, I guess standardizing versus flexibility don't sound quite Yeah, in concert, right.
They sound almost the opposite of each other.
Right, right.
And I think part of the problem is that standardized labor categories force commercial companies into models that they don't otherwise offer. And so what happens is that sometimes the government will not be able to get the solutions that those companies offer because they're outside of the so-called standardized labor category description. And I think that the, you know, when you talk to the government about the objectives there, usually they're around making it easier for agencies to select.
But right, right.
That gets into a whole nother conversation about who the customer is, because it makes it easier for some people. If you're the contracting officer, it's easier to see three categories and take the lowest price for those three. But it does not necessarily translate into easier for the user, for
right, the
ultimate
requirements
user.
Holder, right.
The requirements holder, who may be the last thing they're looking for is something standardized, and the last thing they're looking for is the cheapest provider. They may be looking for the best-in-class provider for a very complicated set of cybersecurity requirements. And you don't want to make your solicitation document so structured that you don't get the best-in-class providers into the market.
Right, and that cuts across the whole, being like professional services schedule, and you can look at examples of companies who price in their commercial norm, it would not...
not even be labor categories.
Right, exactly. Don't use labor categories to price for services, very complex, best-in-class services, and where are they going to go? It's almost like, it turns into a race to the bottom. And I like the way you sort of described the requirements holder. As you know, one of my favorite lines to this is that, you know, standardized labor categories are innovative for a bookkeeper, but not necessarily for a requirements holder,
right,
the person who actually has to accomplish a mission. So, you know, and that sort of bleeds into another issue that 2000 that we've seen grow over the last two or three years, even longer, and that's the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative. And it's, you know, much of it's being done off the JSA schedules. Now there appears to be a trend towards creating new contract vehicles, getting back to contract duplication. You know, in particular, the example is office supplies. And I'd like to get your take on where federal strategic sourcing is, and what kind of recommendations or alternatives or ideas should be discussed, we think, in the procurement community.
Yes, our push at the coalition has been towards effective strategic sourcing. I think everybody at a high level can agree that strategic sourcing is probably a good thing. You want the government to leverage its requirements. You want to take some rational look at your contractor base, but you also need to take a rational look at how you are managing items, so that we think that it should not be a strictly an acquisition function. And thus far, strategic sourcing has been strictly focused on the acquisition side, not the management and use side. And it has been so highly focused on price that some of the, just from the outside, looking in at what the government is doing, it's almost no discussion of value. And that has been a big source of concern for us. And also the fact that there's little, typically in the commercial market, there are a couple of things that do drive pricing if you're looking for pricing. One is your statement of requirements, and other is what kind of commitment you're going to make, typically in terms of volume or usage. And that, at the government-wide level, both the statement of requirements and the volume commitments have been lacking in terms of the people who are trying to bid. They have not gotten enough information to make intelligent pricing decisions.
Right. Well, isn't that boiled down to the fundamental issue that, you know, GSA is not the requirements holder, right? GSA, or even OMB for that matter, is not the requirements holder. GSA is a market maker. It creates a framework through its government-wide contracts, whether it's GWACs or schedules or OASIS Small Business, that creates a market where customer agencies and contractors can compete and acquire, you know, the requirements, compete for and acquire mm-hmm. the requirements to meet agency missions. And, you know, that lends itself to a dynamic market if it's flexible, but also it sort of highlights that, you know, the issue here, trying to manage a market when you don't hold the requirements, I think that's just, you're better off, I think, folk, you know, the closer you are to the requirement and to doing the procurement, I think in the long run, you're better. I know what your views.
That's why one of the things we have on our website, some BPA best practices, and one of the best practices has been to do strategic sourcing at the agency level, because there the agency does have much better information about their specific requirements and who's going to use it. But I'll tell you, even at the agency level, you know, government agencies are so large that even at the agency level, that can be an issue. I just had one of our members talking to me the other day about whether or not one of the agencies that they were working with, and these are the winners, by the way, this is the winner, is getting the savings out of the agreement that they anticipated because they're not getting the usage of the vehicle, even though the contract is supposed to be mandatory. And the reason is because the people closest to the requirements had not agreed on the type of technology or the solution that was available. So, I mean, I think that's just an example of the fact that you really have to have some good information about who's going to be using the contract, and to make sure that they're very tightly involved in the statement of the development of the requirements.
Right. And Carolyn, on that note, we do have to take our last break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
CACI delivers innovative information solutions and services to serve America's highest priorities, advancing efficiency and performance with business systems, countering the effects of complex threats with integrated security solutions, providing healthcare solutions for better, more affordable care, defending the nation against cyber threats, and helping veterans with its award-winning career-building program. CACI. Information deployed, solutions advanced. Missions accomplished. CACI, ever vigilant.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, someone I work with every day. And Carolyn, we've talked a lot about, you know, what's going on in the market, a little bit about strategic sourcing. And, you know, I just open-ended quote, like, where do we go from here? What, you know, mm-hmm. you have any thoughts on, you know, we've made suggestions, we're talking, it's all about dialogue, but just where do we go from here with regard to the market? Or where do people, what do people need to think about out there who are customers and contractors?
Well, you know, I think the good news is that no matter whether I'm talking to people in the government who are managing these programs or people in industry who are working with the government in this program, that there is a shared objective of what's best for the American taxpayer. And I think that's very good. The issues that we have are how to achieve that objective.
Right.
How to achieve that objective. And the way we do it is a little at a time and with a lot of talk.
Correct.
And so we have one of the core philosophies of the coalition is to maintain a constructive dialogue between government and industry. And we work hard at that all the time. We had many, many events last year, and we had government people from various agencies that were more than willing to come in and address our members on their objectives, where they were going. And we're going to continue that in a couple of weeks with our spring conference that's coming up in 6th of April.
No,
oh, I'm
April,
sorry,
10th.
April 10th. I'm sorry.
No, that was a test for me, Carolyn. I got that.
That was. I was just trying to get you, Roger. Yeah. April 10th. And we're going to have a very good lineup of speakers from GSA, from are from customer agencies like the Army and the Air Force. We're going to interestingly have representatives from the Office of Counsel from both the VAIG and the GSAIG's office. We're going to have a great government-wide acquisition summit that will bring in the procurement executives from the Department of Defense, from GSA, and from the Department of Human Resources.
Health and HHS.
I am really getting my names mixed up today.
That's all right. It's been a long day, Carolyn.
Yes, it's been a long day.
A long interview, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. You want to get out of here. I know. I can tell.
Yeah. And we're also going to have a number of breakout sessions, which is kind of a unique aspect of the coalition conferences, that every conference we have small group sessions where there's an opportunity to actually have a lot of give and take on issues of importance and acquisition.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward. I know you're looking forward to the conference. I know you put a lot of time and effort into it, and I appreciate it. You know, from that perspective, you know, I think in just your, dialogue is vital. Whether it's trying to point out areas where things can be improved, or what the impact is. I think a lot of it, there's a lot of today, and I think it's really technology driven. It's not any particular, you know, motivation of either of anybody, but, you know, let's communicate via technology. Let's have lots of touches, whether it's through websites or, you know, webinars or online industry days, and less communication in person. And I think that the value of face-to-face conversation about these issues, so you get a better understanding of both sides' perspectives, that's something that I think we strive to do at the coalition, and you play a huge part in that.
Thank you. I think that you cannot underestimate the value of face-to-face, because it gets to be a real exchange of information. But we have seen more and more that agencies are using social media, webinars, lots of electronic contact where information can be pushed very well, but the exchange is much more difficult unless you're doing it face-to-face. So we do, at the coalition, try to facilitate that face-to-face communication.
Right. And, you know, along those lines, you, with the stakes the way they are these days and what's going on, and I know you're going to give me a hard time about this, but, you know, part of that communication, there's a lot going on. There's been a lot of bid protests around strategic sourcing and understanding the dynamic of it. And I don't think you can eliminate those bid protests by more conversation or engagement, but, you know, sort of understanding what motivates commercial firms to compete, you know, which we talked about, volume commitments and that sort of thing, understanding what the long-term ramifications are for the supply chain or not, and from industry's perspective, understanding what the goals of the federal government are helps companies better craft solutions to meet those requirements. And, you know, I think one of the things that we've seen, unfortunately, is with, you know, events that transpired a few years back with conferences, we've had less engagement, you know, just as a natural reaction to that, a pullback. And I think, you know, we're gratified to see events like our conference, folks are actually starting to step out and talk.
Yeah, I think that communication could definitely reduce the number of protests if there's more clarity around what requirements are. But I think any time that you have a lot of competition and there's a winner-take-all type of acquisition strategy, you're going to have protests. Now, one of the strategic sourcing contracts is getting a lot of protests even before they get to award.
Right, before closing day.
Before
right.
closing. And that type of protest, you would want to think more exchange of information might help drive down the number of protests.
Right. And okay, so we got about a minute left or so, Carolyn, and I wanted to give you, looking ahead, you know, we are in March, but we're looking ahead to the rest of the year with regard to the coalition/government procurement, what's going on in the community. You have any, thing in your crystal ball that you're thinking and you're going to see potentially happen or not happen, or people need to pay attention to?
I don't know whether it's my crystal ball or wishful thinking, but okay. I certainly hope that we see some movement on the multi-board schedule pricing issues. And I hope that we can have some dialogue that actually results in some change around that. I would also like to see some movement on our suggestions on the IT innovation portal, because one of the things that we do advocate is modular approaches to change. Sometimes if you try to rush ahead and fix the world, you end up fixing nothing. So in the IT innovation portal, we have some specific examples of things that we think could be pursued. And also we've suggested that GSA look at those maybe for some more narrow product or service categories to try it. And there's nothing that is in there that probably couldn't be also tried in other, in professional services for sure.
Sure, absolutely.
And in some other, the commodity areas.
No, Carolyn, that was a great answer, except you there's one other thing. Other direct costs on schedule.
Other direct costs. How could I have a conversation and not talk about that? We have been pushing at the coalition for the GSA to add the ability to acquire other direct costs.
And materials,
And materials within the framework of the contract. There's already a vehicle there in that the FAR provides for it. And we would hope the GSA would follow through with implementing it in the schedule. And it's been a long time coming. It's been several years. But the good news is that GSA did put out a notice in the Federal Register. It was a RFI soliciting feedback on how they should pursue adding the ability to acquire other direct cost of materials at the task order level.
Right, and that would go a long way to reducing contract duplication.
Absolutely.
Could make the schedules more flexible, which is
make
what we taught.
Make it more flexible.
Right, more innovative, more flexible. Mm-hmm. I want to thank my guest today, Carolyn Alston. She is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.